through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
The right-hander's pitch. Swing clocked deep out to right center field. This is driven way, way back. This is by the wall. Siri crashes off the wall. This ball is gone. It's over the fence. Taylor Trammell has taken Justin Verlander deep on the first pitch of the bottom of the sixth inning. It's the Mariners' fourth home run against Verlander tonight, and Trammell's first of 2022.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is the man of the hour, Mariners outfielder Taylor Trammell. Taylor, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. I mean, first of all, congratulations. A wonderful couple games from you here. You had that home run off of Justin Verlander on Friday, and then you had four, not one, not two, not three, four RBI yesterday. How's it feel to kind of hit the ground running here?
Oh, it's great. I mean, kind of like anything with this sport, you know, whenever you're, you know, doing pretty well, you know, you just try to ride that wave as long as possible. But, you know, for me right now, just trying to stay, you know, stay cool, calm and collected and just build on each and every day.
Taylor, it looks like immediately when you came up that the relationships that you have built with everybody, you know, from the big league club to the AAA level, you know, it just seems like it's very genuine. How fun is it to be around a group of guys that you feel like you can be yourself and have fun?
Oh, it's awesome. These guys, you know, I don't even just say up here, everywhere in the organization, there's guys around that, you know, you can relate to, you can talk to. I'm sitting kind of like across from Penn Murphy right now, and he's a guy who I first saw when I got called up in Boston. You know, he was the guy who I, you know, immediately just like saw right as I got out of my Uber. Mm-hmm. And he helped me with my bags. And so this is a testament to the guys that, you know, the Mariners signed, the Mariners have. And for me, it's great because I get to relate to those guys no matter where I'm at.
Penn also just a great guy. We had him on for an interview a while back. He's really funny.
Yeah, you know, part-time comedian.
Yeah, there you go. You're like, I've taught him everything he knows. I mean, he gets it from me. So. Hey, Taylor, you came up at an interesting time. Obviously, you've been with this club before, but you were called back up when this team was in a bit of a slump. And I kind of imagine it as like that scene in, I think, Community when Donald Glover walks in and like the apartment's on fire and he's holding pizzas and it's like, oh, God, what's happening? I mean, what was the environment like when you got here? Or was it totally fine and guys are saying we're going to get through this?
Oh, it was totally fine. I don't think anybody really had a panic or anything like that. I don't want to say like this in a bad way, but I was out in Arizona and I kind of, you know, kept to myself and everything like that. So I wasn't really aware of kind of like things that were going on or anything like that. And, you know, I was just, I came in and, you know, guys were like, just, hey, look, like, just do your job and you'll be fine. So that's kind of like how I've taken this approach of, you know, being up here right now and everything like that, you know, just, you know, doing my job. You know, that's kind of like the, kind of like my motto for, you know, 2022, just do my job and take care of what I need to take care of. And I feel like all the other pieces will fall in the line. So that's kind of like how the approach I've been taking for 2022.
You know, Taylor, a lot that I want to ask you about that in particular, but I have to ask you before any of that. You know, when you got up against Justin Verlander and you hit that rocket shot for a home run, I mean, just a pure mm-hmm. line drive, how good did that feel coming off the bat? Did you think that that was going to be a home run or were you worried that it was close?
No, I knew off the bat it was going to be a home run. But throughout the whole time of facing Justin, it was really cool just because he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I think everybody kind of knows that. But also it was kind of like a testament to me, just because, you know, I put a lot of work in the off season, and then also in rehab as well. You know, I really worked on it, and just mental skills, work as well. And just showing no fear, you know, understanding, yes, respect him, as a, you know, as a Cy Young winner and MVP, et cetera, et cetera. His resume goes on and on, but also understanding like, I'm here, you know, like I've arrived here. Like I'm Taylor Trammell and I don't, you know, I had the confidence that, you know, I'm going to get the job done. So that's kind of like a testament for me right there.
We've talked a lot about the mentality of trying to adjust to the big leagues, and I think that in baseball it's the hardest. It's not just the biggest gap talent-wise, physically, with mechanics and everything, but it's just the biggest gap in terms of going from college to the minors to the majors, and it's always just so I don't want to say shocking in a good way, but it's such a pleasant surprise when you have guys that just go up there and they're just able to mentally be ready for it and mentally adjust. Do you feel like you showed up to the bigs, made your debut, and was able to mentally adjust pretty quickly, or do you feel like that's something that came a little bit later?
I feel like I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot more guys that you probably wouldn't even notice that are still kind of getting adjusted to it. This game is a tough game, and I'm starting to understand and get adjusted to, like I said, the mental part of the game. And also kind of like just making sure like you're just paying attention. I think a lot of it is just really just paying attention, but also understanding the work that you put in on and off the field is something that you need to have. And then also the confidence part. I think, honestly, you look at a lot of the better players in the game, the very good players, a lot of them have high confidence. A lot of them are confident in what they do because they do put in the work on and off the field. And me, I'm getting adjusted to that right now, understanding that I have put in the work throughout the off season, throughout this year. So my confidence is a little bit higher right now. But also to that point, I'm also still getting adjusted to that, to this as well. So I'm still growing. I'm still learning day by day and just picking up anything that I can from these guys on and off the field.
Well, you're doing a phenomenal job with it, Taylor. I want to follow up just quickly with the mental aspect of it. Obviously, Jake and I have never played, and that part of it fascinates me, but it's something that a very few people ever understand, and you're one of them. So I'm curious if you could just walk me through just a little bit more. Is it confidence? Is it seeing pitches a certain way from major league pitching? Is it the pressure of walking up to the plate with, you know, 40,000 fans as opposed to, you know, the people that are in a minor league park? I mean, what is it that changes mentally when you get to the majors?
You have to understand that the game is still the same game. Mm. No matter how many people are in the stands, no matter you know, how many people are watching on TV or anything like that, it's still the same game. And me, I still fall into that from time to time, understanding like, oh, okay, this is a lot bigger than we actually think it is. It's not, you know, the mound is still 60.6 feet away. The bases are 90 feet away. The field is maybe a little bit bigger, but that's no problem. So just understanding that, you know, this is the same game. Guys are, you know, they're going to have a little bit of better stuff, but it's most of the time it's nothing that you've really never seen before. Obviously there are guys that you do face that you're just like, hey, you know, tip your cap to this guy. He's throwing me a pitch that I've never seen before. He has a fastball that I just can't see. But in the grand scheme of things, it's the same game. You really just have to stay within yourself and not try to do too much more than you actually can. So that's kind of like how I've kind of like I said, gone about this season and everything like that.
Taylor, you in your past are a football guy. I'm a football guy. And, you know, the game of football, there is not as much, I would say there's the details of it, but not nearly as much detail or tinkering that can happen or go on in baseball as you were just talking about. You know, as you go through that process for the first time and you're experiencing failure, at a different rate, you know, like all Major League Baseball players do, how easy is it to kind of get caught up in that, right? Like, how easy is it for that to happen versus, you know, football? It's just, hey, you know, I've just got to try harder, right?
Yeah, it definitely is an adjusting, part of an adjusting period. I do find myself sometimes, say, like, if I'm upset or if I'm like, you know, if I'm not fond of a pitcher or something like that. Like, I'll try and get really big. And kind of like in football, you know, for me, the cool part about it is if, you know, like you know, if another team's talking trash to me or something like that, you know, I would be able to just go like, okay, like I'm about to just run through this guy and make a statement, you know.
Yes.
In baseball, you know, in baseball it's a little bit of a different story. Like, you know, for me, for example, like Justin Verlander, like I'm not going to go up there and just try and muscle everything on him because he's, you know, he can see that, you know, he's able to do. I have no idea what he's pitching or anything like that, location or anything like that. So yes, it does take it a bit of an adjusting period for that. So yeah.
You know, Taylor, it's really appreciate, you know, the conversation here. It's been really, really fun for us. Love getting to know you a little bit better too. But you know, one of the things that you had mentioned previously, and I'm fascinated by this. I love it. I'm deep into it myself. Just, you know, you talk about sports psychology, and you talk about the mental side of the game. Is that something that you have always constantly worked on, or is it something that you wanted to tap more into, you know, after your first stint here with the Mariners and realize that that is an asset for you?
I just recently started doing it, probably about around like July of last year. Just understanding that it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to get adjusted to the game. One of the things some of my coaches even told me was there are no really overnight successes. And I think a lot of people see that, and it's just like, okay, you know, like, okay, a little bit of success here, but people didn't see, you know, when, you know, certain guys are like rehabbing or they suffer an injury and they have to mentally be there. People don't see the workouts that we do in the off season or anything like that, and how we worked on our swings, our throwing mechanics, and all this other stuff. These are things that, you know, it takes time. You know, I found out being patient is a big thing, because when you're patient and you're able to learn and actually take in all the things that you're actually doing, you know, that time where it is your opportunity to shine, you take that and you run with it. So that's kind of like, for me, kind of like how I've gone about this process. And like I said, I'm still learning. I'm still getting adjusted to the game, and I'm just building on it every single day.
All right, Taylor, last question here. I'm not sure if you saw it, but there was a New York Times article that came out just the other day about players wearing perfume and cologne. You've been around the game. Who are the strongest smelling dudes you've been around, Taylor?
Me.
Really?
Do you?
No, like, no, yeah. I collect cologne. Yeah.
So what are you wearing for this series? I feel like I'm like on a red carpet right now. I'm so excited.
So, don't judge me.
I am not judging you at all. I have so many bottles of fragrance.
I mean, Taylor, listen, man. This is just between
you. Are talking
you
to the right person.
Stacy and me. It's
no
all
one
good.
Else is listening.
Look. Okay, so for this, well, I kind of wear one cologne for my, I think I have over about 50 bottles of cologne, maybe.
Wow.
I like collecting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I collect them. And it ranges from different seasons of the year and stuff like that, all that other stuff. So this series, well, not this series, I kind of wear it every single game. Baccarat Rouge 450 by Maces Francis Cujan.
Okay.
So yeah, this, Don't look up the price or anything.
No, no. Don't even worry about it. I am right on board with you. I literally just got a new fragrance the other day, Yves Saint Laurent, and I am about it. And
Okay, so question.
If you have a fantastic game, you hit a home run, do you wear that cologne the next series, or do you switch it up?
I wear the same thing. I wear the same thing every single game.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And so to that point, I hate to do this to you. To that point, people kind of know that I like cologne. Even in spring training, Jesse Winker, we had our interviews for the year. Jesse Winker got me Bond cologne. And I had my interview, and he got me Bond. So that was kind of
nice.
Like one of the cool things for spring training.
That's really nice.
That is
good.
Awesome.
On Jesse. All right,
that's
all right. Awesome. Taylor, that was awesome. A much better answer than I was even expecting. I feel like we learned more about you here. Let me tell you what, you are so fun to watch, and hearing you take us through kind of like the mental adjustments to the game is fascinating for us, because we obviously don't get that insight. And I do hope that this series is a fun one for you, because that fun when you guys are having it is so contagious. So best of luck. Have a good one today.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I had a blast with you guys.
All right. Thanks, Taylor. I am like, so I feel like Taylor and I just connected on 40
to
right
50
now.
Bottles of cologne.
I respect
Holy
it.
Smokes.
I thought I was bad. I have about 10.
You have 10?
I have 10.
I have one that I buy, and then when I run out of it, I'm like,
buy the
I can't,
same one again.
I can't buy that again. So I go like maybe like a couple months without it, and I'm like, you know what? I need to bring that back. I have to have that back.
I decided on my scent when I was a single guy by YouTubing best smelling colognes, and a pretty girl made a YouTube video of her top 5 scents, and the number one scent is what
you were
I went
like,
with.
Let's go.
And my wife Britta, I still wear
That's
it.
How
for
you got
her,
her.
And
That's
she loves
how you got
it.
Her.
Yes, this, whoever this Perfect. Lady was.
Yeah.
Shout
Thank
out to
you
her.
For my
Thank
family.
You. Yeah. Now wearing some Dior.
I can understand why Taylor Trammell did not want us to look this up. It's a $400
Whoa,
bottle.
You can't
of
put
cologne.
Him on blast like that. Well,
yes,
I, will
I
say,
can. He
I
said
say,
it. I'm going to look it up.
Listen, I will say cologne and perfume. Really nice cologne and perfume. Particularly,
Holy smokes.
You would be surprised, particularly cologne, very expensive.
Well, I know that. Just like a mid-range nice cologne, it still costs a lot of money. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, if you look good, right? If you look
good,
you feel good and you play good.
It's working
for
him. So,
look, that's all that matters. And right now, Taylor Trammell, that was an awesome interview.
I love that Jesse got him that bottle.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool.
All right, we don't have a lot of time here for headline rewrites. We'll sprint through them, so let's go.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Julio Rodriguez ejected for the first time in his career last night during the Mariners 10-0 win after he drew a line in the dirt to dispute yet another called third strike. What's the real headline?
Julio ejected after breaking unspoken rule. Subheadline, it's a soft rule, though. It's a soft rule. Look, he should have done it. It was passive aggressive. I don't buy that it was this incidental kind of
Oh,
like,
come on.
Oh,
you're not
no.
buying my theory?
Absolutely not. No, he was annoyed. He was annoyed at that call. And he did a little passive-aggressive swipe in the sand. He shouldn't have done it. He should not have done it. That said, I think in general, umps are a little soft this year.
They are a little soft. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, Julio, if you're going to do that, do it on an actual ball call. Like, that was a really good pitch. It was a strike. Like, you don't do that when it's a strike call. And you know Julio feels bad about it and probably looked back at it in the tracer and, dang it, he was right and I was wrong, and so you learn from those moments, and it's going to happen again to Julio at some point in time. He's going to get frustrated with a call, but, you know, just don't get yourself ejected, all right? That's the big key here. Don't get yourself ejected.
From the 425, I didn't think Stacey could make an interview any more awkward after the fake brother question. First of all, nothing will be more awkward than me asking
there
Bill Kirby about his brother.
Absolutely
Secondly,
nothing.
What was awkward about that?
Absolutely, there was nothing awkward about that. What are you talking about?
That was a
about?
Great interview.
That
Taylor
was
so nice.
Fun. That was so fun. Yeah. I actually get chills thinking about you asking George Kirby about his brother.
I would
that
not
never
like
existed.
To ever discuss this again. I would like to pretend it never happened. I will never, ever be
Curtis,
able to interview George Kirby again.
Stacey's look after she
I
after
didn't know
George,
what to do.
Sheer terror.
I didn't know what to do. I just looked at Jake and I went like, what?
Help me. Help me. And all I did was laugh. I felt so bad.
He didn't help me at all.
I didn't know what to do. I thought that you were going to step in and like try to save yourself.
I hate it here.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You love it here.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, despite a potential ownership sale in the coming months, Washington Nationals GM Mike Rizzo says his team will not be trading Juan Soto, and they intend to build around the 23-year-old superstar. What's the real headline?
Mike Rizzo, quote, if you're going to try to trade for Juan Soto, we need the farm. That's what Mike Rizzo is saying. We will not trade for Soto unless you give us everything you have.
Exactly. And that's exactly what he should do, because why on earth would you trade Juan Soto? You shouldn't.
He's only 23.
If you trade Juan Soto, you should be fired. Fired on the spot.
Well, the other thing, what if we, in particular here in Seattle, learned about prospects? That no matter how highly touted they are, a sure thing, especially a 23-year-old sure thing, is better. What's it? A bird in the hand is better than two in the bush? Whatever it is. What's the phrase?
You're asking the wrong guy right here for any kind of phrasing.
I am literally dripping sweat right now.
Don't go to me.
Don't call on me.
Curtis, you have the answer?
I believe that is the correct saying.
I have never typed into my Google machine harder.
God, what did Jake say yesterday?
Burying the hole that they've found themselves
no,
in.
No, they really buried the hole that they dug themselves
look,
out
Look, I blacked
of.
Out. I don't remember it. Let's move on, okay? All right? You don't want to talk about you asking questions about George Kirby's relatives
like
that don't exist.
I would like to not talk
about that again. Don't you bring up my failed phrases, please.
There's so many of them to choose from. God. Real jack of all aces.
Can lean your hat on that.
Those two are just mainstream. Like, I think people have just adopted them now.
Oh, I loved it. It's like pulling magic out of a hat.
Headline number three, Paolo Banchero, who is likely going to be a top two pick in this year's NBA draft. Not a fan of the OKC Thunder. He is a Seattle native. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I grew up with the Sonics a little bit. I was like six, I think, when they left. So I never liked the Thunder.
Funny part about that is OKC has the number two pick in this year's draft. What's the real headline?
Sounds to me like Banchero deserves to be the number one pick in the draft after that sentiment. I am co-signing on it 1,000%.
Oh, boy. I mean,
I hate OKC forever.
Oh, forever. Forever.
And who do you hate more? Let's talk sports hating.
Okay.
Boston fans, OKC. Not fans, OKC.
OKC.
Not even close.
Yeah.
There is no franchise I hate more than the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I mean,
not the Yankees, not the Red Sox. Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean,
no, I mean, I agree with you. I'm just trying to think of like anything.
They are the only team where I will celebrate their elimination from the playoffs every year.
Every single
year. It'll happen every year.
Yeah. It is a holiday. It is a holiday here.
To all those who observe.
Yes. 100%.
Remember when they lost on like an 80-foot heave this year? And we talked about it on the show.
We did.
It was the greatest thing that happened.
And it was. I love listeners sending in some Jake idioms, Jake specials. Last week, Jake said Trevor Story's season didn't get off to a great foot.
Did I say that? I don't think I said that. I didn't say that.
No, I think you definitely said that.
No way.
It's Jake and Stacy. You are listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com. All right, it's our last one of the day because 145 is going to be this or that. So our last Seahawks Q&A. We looked at success in 2022 for the Seahawks. What's the worst case scenario in 2022? That's next.
Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, taking a look around the NFL, we're going to start in the NFC West, where Kyler Murray has showed up to OTAs. He's in the middle of a contract dispute with the Arizona Cardinals, hasn't participated in any offseason training activities yet until today.
I still am reeling, Stacy, from this Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial.
I should have come in with that.
Yeah, could you repeat that again?
You want me to do the okay? Yeah.
Yes,
thank
I do.
Thank you for turning away from E! News for a minute.
You're very welcome. I'm sorry.
That's no worries.
I just got it. So
Kyler Murray has showed up to Cardinals OTAs amid contract disputes. It is his first time appearing in off-season training activities for Arizona.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're such a great partner. Look, Kyler Murray in the situation with Arizona, I don't exactly know what the status of their relationship is in regards to the feelings that are going on. Obviously, we know that they were on really, really rocky ground after the Super Bowl. But I would say that at the moment, it does feel like they are working towards a deal, that there is some confidence on both sides that can get done. And overall, I don't know exactly why Kyler Murray held out OTAs. Was it purely off of contract dispute? Was it because he didn't want to show up and wanted to train on his own?
I think people assumed, look, this is a guy. It's a mix of things. It's Kyler Murray deleting all Cardinals references from his Instagram and then releasing this really long statement about how, I don't know, he wants to be in Arizona or he's not. I even know what he was saying. Then there's the idea that's always been in the back of people's minds of this is a team that has regularly disappointed its fans. They had this guy that they drafted, Josh Rosen, who didn't end up being much of anything and didn't really have the best weapons in the first place. Then they brought in Kyler Murray, who's exceptionally talented, but they just haven't been able to get right. They've even then, like even making an appearance in the postseason, despite all these big offseason moves, bringing in J.J. Watt and making a bunch of trades, it wasn't enough because they just didn't look like they knew how to be there.
Yeah, it just it's one of the things that if I'm the Arizona Cardinals and they are talking about paying him and giving him a contract this summer, I don't understand it. I don't understand why they would do that.
I do. I think that Kyler Murray is, he is not the most talented young franchise star in the NFL, but he is significantly better than many other options. And
yeah,
there are only so many teams that are going to have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, maybe Josh Allen. I mean, he is exceptionally talented, but I'm saying in terms of like what you can expect year in and year out, like take away those guys. So that leaves what? 28 other teams that are trying to figure out who they have and whether that guy's good enough. I mean,
yeah.
I think having a guy that's top 10 is worth paying as opposed to having a guy that just isn't good enough to ever get you there.
But Kyler Murray hasn't proven that he is a complete top 10 quarterback.
Has he not proven he can be great, or has Cliff Kingsbury not proven he can be the right coach for Kyler Murray?
I think it's a combination of the two. To be honest with you, I think Kyler Murray wears it just as much as Cliff Kingsbury does. I really, truly believe that. I mean, so that's why I am not sure why the Arizona Cardinals are in a rush, because I do think that you want to see Kyler Murray, not that you want to get rid of him, but from a contract perspective, Stacey, if I'm going to pay a quarterback $45 million at this point, that's the going rate at the current moment, I want to make sure that this is somebody that can help get me to the playoffs and is somebody that can lead my team. And those are major question marks about Kyler. It's not a talent issue. He's got all the talent in the world. Are you going to pay $45 million to a quarterback that can't quite get you over the hump when it comes to making the playoffs and actually doing something in the playoffs?
Many texters, listeners right now, obviously we're all talking NFL, but this message from the, where did it just go? From the 360 sums it up. Hey, I'm driving and I can't look it up. Can you guys tell me the result?
of the
Johnny Depp trial. Yes, I will. I will tell you. I got you. A court ruled that Amber Heard did defame Johnny Depp, and he won a $15 million lawsuit against her. In her countersuit, she was awarded $2 million. I don't really know all the details about that, but essentially Johnny Depp they ruled in his favor and that Amber Heard defamed Depp. That is... I know that like there's a handful of you guys that are like, wait a minute, Jake, can you follow that up with telling me the verdict, please?
I mean, yeah, that's crazy, and that's a lot of money that she's got to pay that I don't think she has. So yikes.
Mark Sessler of the Around the NFL podcast and NFL.com has his list of six teams that improved during the NFL offseason. Here's the bad news: Bears, three of them are in the NFC West. So who is the odd one out, or maybe all end up going? Well, who knows? He's got the Chargers improving. Obviously, they made some big moves. I still forget Khalil Mack is there. I really like Staley there as their head coach as well.
Yep.
They've got Mack paired with Joey Bosa. They brought in J.C. Jackson, who was the top free agent corner available, and I really like him. So they've got a good squad going on there. Then you've got the Raiders and obviously the Broncos finding their quarterback all make the list. The Jets, Dolphins, and Philadelphia Eagles also in here.
Yeah, this is something that I believe that when you're talking about, you know, overall who had the best off seasons. I mean, I think that they're fun to talk about, but it's a matter of how they all come together. Do you remember that year? I'm trying to remember what exactly the year was where the Eagles, they assembled the quote unquote dream team.
Oh, right? Yes. It was with Chip. Chip Kelly was
no,
there? Was that
it was
it?
When
was
they
it
had
before
like
then?
Nnamdi Asamoah yeah, on the roster.
It was 2011. Yep.
Yeah.
2011.
Yeah. Dream they finished
team.
7-9,
oh, no, Chip
was still
at
right? Dream team. And they had made all of these additions in the offseason. And, you know, everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be unbelievable. The Eagles are going to be unbelievable. And they finished 8-8, right?
What is the last?
So, with all of this hype surrounding these teams, right? Mm-hmm. Denver Broncos, the Chargers, the Raiders, you know, go down the list. The Eagles is a part of this list. You know, it's not all going to work out perfectly for these mm-hmm. teams, right? It just, it isn't. And I'm going to be curious from a culture perspective how these individual head coaches and leadership manage these additions and how they're actually able to put them together, because that's going to be the separating factor when it comes to the season. And so, do you have a dream team situation here that is going to fall completely flat? I don't know if you can pick one definitively, because all of these additions that you just mentioned with these teams are really good additions, and they make sense. They make sense in terms of what they're trying to do.
Question.
Yes.
What is the team, any sport, any league, most recently that you can remember? It doesn't have to be all time, but maybe one of the more recent examples. Build as a super team, or an unbeatable team that disappointed. I think some people would say the Brooklyn Nets, although I don't think they did. Oh, the Lakers this year. But there was enough red flags with the Lakers. You're bringing in superstars from how many years ago?
Stacey, your friends over with the Nets.
I don't know that I would say that they were disappointed.
James Harden.
They disappointed.
But they went to the semifinals,
they
right?
disappointed. Semifinals with that team? Are you kidding me, Stacey? You're telling me that that was a success?
Yes.
That team was supposed to be going to the NBA Finals. And one
so
of your big and one of the big three left. They won it out.
It's like, yeah, I can't deal with Kyrie. That's when you know, like, things have gone nuts. Is when James Harden is all of a sudden the most level-headed in that locker room.
No
was
way.
That 2020-21 that season?
The Nets season?
No,
that
no,
was this
the,
last
the
one.
Season. Yeah. This last one. But what was the one? Not this last one.
The Lakers?
No, I'm thinking of the Nets season. This season was like the Super Bowl.
This last
season.
They lost in the first round
that.
This year.
Okay.
The year prior, they lost to Giannis in the second round.
That's
where
what
Kevin
I'm
Durant's
about.
Foot was on the 3-point
yes.
line.
Yes.
If he had stepped back an inch, they would have won the series.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yep. And guess what? They didn't do it. They didn't even sniff the finals. And who called it? I did.
JD in the 509 says Yankees every year.
Okay.
Yeah, they got a massive payroll.
Yeah, they do. I mean,
I think the Nets would be for most people, just because it was billed as this, like, I can't believe what they're doing. This is insane. Three superstars, and it wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't nearly enough. I mean, I think that is the most recent example that I can think of, a super team that has really failed expectations that hard. But yeah, I mean, so
yeah,
that's
2020-21 lost in the Eastern Conference semis. Not first round in either year on the other side of that.
Yeah, so I don't have a hot take in regards to what team I think is going to be the Philadelphia Eagles' dream team, right? But obviously here in Seattle, you're hoping that the Denver Broncos are going to be that team, right? Because you hold their first round pick, so their first and second round pick. So I know Seattle, everyone here is going to be rooting for that. But I think that there's so many good additions in the AFC. It's going to be so fascinating
from
to watch how it shakes out.
Three last year's Padres, a team that didn't even make the playoffs.
Didn't
that's
even
a good
have
one.
A winning record.
That's
yeah,
a good
in part
one.
Because no one saw the Giants winning as many games as they did.
Yes.
Toledo.
That's a really good one. They were the most exciting team to watch in baseball before the All-Star break.
What
by
is
far.
The worst case scenario for the Seahawks in 2022? That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Every 45 after, this is actually our last one today because 1:45 is going to be wrapping up the show. We're talking about Seahawks Q&A. So there is a new post up on seattlesports.com answering your questions sent in on Twitter. But I had so many questions sent in that not only are we going to have multiple parts for that Seahawks Q&A, again, up on seattlesports.com, but I wanted to include some questions in our discussions today. So we've done that at 10:45, 11:45, and this is our final one. This Seahawks Q&A submitted by a listener. Is the worst case scenario for the Seahawks an 8-win season? Not good enough to make the playoffs, but not bad enough for a top pick. Jake.
I view that as not necessarily a major negative for the team if they were in that position. The reason why is because ultimately, when you look at the draft positioning of teams that, let's say they're an 8-win team, right? That still puts you in a favorable position when it comes to the draft. So you're going to be what? Somewhere around the top. You're going to be in the top 15, right? I mean, somewhere in that range, depending on the year. And so I think that when you're looking at that, it isn't ideal when it comes to trying to land your next quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the focus is on. All right, well, if we're a middling team and you don't make the playoffs, you don't get that payoff, well, now you're stuck, you know, being, you know, around the middle of the draft, and do you have the ability to go get your quarterback? Well, I would say that yes, they do, because Stacey, they possess two firsts and two seconds.
So that's what I wanted to make very clear.
In next year's draft.
It's a very good question. What I would say is the worst case scenario isn't necessarily kind of like mediocrity in terms of the record.
Yeah.
It's not having any development from younger stars. Because if you have the number two overall pick, fantastic. You can get one of the premier passers that are going to be available in this year's draft class, which are all more highly touted than last year's. It's going to be a great year for quarterbacks. And I personally am hoping that Seattle is able to get one of those passers in 2023. But that being said, it would feel a little bittersweet getting that number two overall pick and then knowing you did not get any development from young players. Whereas if you have number 12 overall, does it sting as much if you know that Daryl Taylor and Jordan Brooks were, you know, Pro Bowlers, or that Charles Cross was a Pro Bowler, or that Ken Walker came out and had almost, you know, like 800 yards or something? Like, you feel good about having 10, 11, 12, maybe 9 or whatever, if you had great development from young guys. And then I threw on as an added thing what you just mentioned, Jake, which is don't forget the draft flexibility the Seahawks have with two firsts in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
If you have 10 overall, 12 overall, 15, I personally think they're going to have a losing record or as close to 500 as you can with a 17-game season. So I don't see them being much better than that. But let's say that they finish around 12th mm-hmm. or whatever. You have the draft capital to move up.
Yes.
Not to one, barring another probably a second trade, but you have the capital to make some movement.
You do. Now, the thing is that maybe the Seahawks are in a position where they don't feel like they need to move up. That, yeah, maybe the top guys in the draft are going to get taken, and they're okay with that because they feel like they have been able to find the next Russell Wilson, right? Somebody that is being undervalued that they like, and that John Schneider says, hey, I think that this guy's going to be a stud. Look at Patrick Mahomes. Look at Deshaun Watson. Those guys fell in the teens mm-hmm. when they
Lamar
were drafted.
Jackson was last pick of the first round.
100%, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have the number one overall pick or the top five pick to be able to land your guy. And hopefully they're not on the outside looking and saying, well, the only way to get the quarterback we really want is to be in the top five. That would be the position that would really be a bummer. But I think what you said, Stacey, is the most important thing, is you don't care about your draft positioning if you're taking a quarterback and putting him a part of a team where he needs to be the savior.
Mm-hmm.
That is, sometimes it works. Oftentimes it doesn't. More times than not, it is a failed experiment. And for every Joe Burrow, there are 20, 30, 40 quarterbacks.
Carson Wentz's.
I mean,
Jared Goff.
Yeah, it just does not work. It does not work. It's not in your favor. And so what you would rather have is a strong team. We talked about that foundation laid and set. You'd rather have that foundation laid and set and be able to have a team, a solid team that is around this quarterback, whoever it may be, that comes and enters and is a part of this team moving forward, that they have the talent around them to be successful. That you're looking at Russell Wilson and what he walked into as a rookie, and now they're able to take off, and they're the catalyst to this team. Patrick Mahomes, catalyst to this team, right? Josh Allen, like those are the situations that you want to ideally place whatever quarterback is going to, you know, eventually be your future.
A very, very good question, because it is a unique season for Seahawks fans where you can't quite tell, if I want one of those quarterbacks, I'm rooting for them to fail, but I don't want to root for my team to fail. It's a very good question.
It's hard.
But I would say that while you want to get as high a pick as possible, having draft capital helps, that extra first-round pick, and also maybe nothing would be worse. The worst case scenario for the Seahawks, nothing would be worse than feeling like you left the 2022 season with no foundation. That is the worst feeling you could possibly have,
100%.
Leaving 2022. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, jumping back into the Mariners conversation. They have a lot to prove over the next couple months. How's the effort looking so far?